Welcome to the Finance Geeks Podcast with Paul Korth and Warren Chu. Two financial planners shoot the breeze while sharing tips for making the most of your money and living your best life. Expect a lot of laughs and genuine insights that might just transform the way you look at your finances. Remember to follow, like, and subscribe to the show. And now over to the geeks in the studio. But they are not in a studio. They are geeks in their own office.
Welcome to episode 7 of the Finance Geek Podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name is Warren Chu. I'm here joined today by
Paul Clemworth.
Hey, Paul. Today we're geeking out and talking about how much is enough. So, Paul, hey, what have you been up to?
I've been to Cornwall on holiday recently. Yeah, last week I went to, it was Easter break for the kids. They got 2 weeks off, so my wife's still thinking of things to do with them this week. She took them to, what's it called? Something Ninja. American Ninja or Ninja. No. It's one of those parks where you go and you jump over, like trampolines and yeah, all of that. And so they went been to Watford with their friends today to do that. But last week we went to, we stayed near Penzance in Prasans, and it's an Airbnb, and we took the in-laws, took the dog, had a bit of terrible weather 2/3 of the time, but made do.
You should have bumped into Pete Matthews, going to give a knock on the door.
I actually went to his office, to Jackson's, There was no one in because I think it was a weekend, but I took a selfie outside his office.
Did you post it to him?
No, I didn't actually. I need to do that. So I saw where his office is and I walked around Penzance for one of the days, but the best day was St. Ives where we had sunny weather. We went on the beach and then one day we went to Falmouth, to Pendennis Castle and English Heritage Place. And yeah, that was tremendous.
Fish and chips on the beach?
Didn't actually. We had fish and chips in a restaurant and we had a Cornish pasty.
You're so posh.
We didn't have fish and chips on the beach. That would have been nice, wouldn't it? But I did play on St. Ives Beach, did play some frisbee with my boys, and that was, they loved it. Cool. So that was the best part of the holiday, the best day, actually. We put one of those small tents on the beach.
Playing frisbee with the boys on the beach.
It was. I think it was the best part of the holiday. I mean, what do you want to say? The best part was walking the dog or... I did actually I had a date night with my lovely wife, Alison, and we went into Penzance to this lovely restaurant and had some fish, and it was just, yeah, tremendous.
Was it her best day?
Undoubtedly. Best evening, for sure. But on the way back, driving back from Cornwall, as you know, is a bit of a disaster. I mean, get lucky, there's either roadworks or there's delays. And so I took my car with the boys and the dog and all the luggage. And it's one of these, Ford Ranger trucks with the canopy on the back. And it took me 8.5 hours to get back.
And
it took Alison 11.5 hours because she had a blowout going 60 miles an hour in her Tesla. And the rear wheel just like evaporated. And she managed to maneuver to the hard shoulder, call the AA. And I helped my son direct her to a tire place and got the tires fixed up. Then she had to drive her folks back to Wales, to Griffithstown in near Pontypool. And then drove home. So 11.5 hours. So that rounded off the holiday quite nicely.
Did you have a gin and tonic waiting for her when she walked in the door?
I think I did. Memory. Yeah. She just wanted to go to sleep. It was just such a long day.
She did. Yeah. Wake up. Today's going to be over. Tomorrow's another day. Let's just you always have those days. You know, everyone has those days. But
you do.
After the blowout.
Yeah. I'm pleased. I mean, I'm actually had a fun time buying 6 new tires this week from a website called My Tires. Just because the tires on the Tesla are a bit old and, I wanted to put some better quality ones on, some all weather ones on, some ones that last longer and, safety first. So I've done that. And I've got another 2 for my truck where they're just, they're a bit low. But I got a company that comes around the house and puts them on. So fascinating stuff. Yeah. Safety first. Yeah. What about you? What have you been up to, Mr. Shoot, this last week or
I had 2 weeks. Yeah, I had 2 weeks off Easter. We didn't go away anywhere. We stayed home. I'm very lucky. I love my home and I love the area we live in. And Easter is my favorite time of year. So just 2 weeks off, took it easy. Went out for dinner every day. My wife, I said, look, let's just sort of pretend we're on holiday. So we took trips to Bath. We lived near Cirencester. Went off to Bath for a day, went into Cirencester and did a few trips. So went into London.
I know where you live. I've been to your house. Yeah.
I know you do, but I'm just explaining for the listeners. They're like, well, where does he live? He likes living where he lives. But it's good. I tell you what, I had the most amazing fish and chips in a restaurant in Cirencester. Malt and Anchor, it was called, and never been there before. I've lived here for donkey years.
What was good about it? What was so great about these fish and chips? The size?
Wasn't It wasn't, no, it wasn't oily, it wasn't greasy, very light batter, and it was just extremely tasty. I don't know whether it was, I was very hungry or what, but it was very good.
Well, food tastes better when you're hungry. If you're absolutely famished, you know, things taste better. And if you're really, really tired, you know, sleep is better. You'll have the best night's sleep after you're really tired. So it's that perception, isn't it, of what's good and what's the best. And
But it was, anyway, they're very tasty. I had a great time. It was nice. And we also played paddleball, which the first time I played it and absolutely loved it. I'm hooked. So
you're an expert now.
Even I couldn't push myself to say an expert, but really like it. It's basically tennis in a squash court with,
I was gonna say, it's a cross, isn't it,
swing,
between them?
Yeah, it's swing ball rackets and stuff. And I played with my son on the first day, loved it, took the family, Nikki and Bella, back, and played the second day with them and really enjoyed it. But we'll definitely,
so it's for people that can't quite, are not fit enough for tennis or squash.
Yeah. It's exactly that, yeah.
Got it.
I fit straight in.
Yes, very good, very good. And you said earlier on that when we were just prior to us starting the podcast, that you've been overindulging, eating too much.
Yeah,
you've been keeping up the fizz.
It's the 2 weeks off the diet. It done what I want. Everything else, but then Monday straight back on it. So been in the gym, working out, and
feeling.
But the irony is, you feel so much better when you eat better, don't you? You feel better, eat better, work out, and stuff like, you feel much better, and head's clear. But yeah, it's nice to have those breaks. I think you appreciate things more if everything's the same all the time. You don't really appreciate it. So it's nice to have that bit of variety.
Yeah, definitely. So,
hey, so what's hot off the press this week?
Right, so what's hot off the press for me? I was doing a bit of rooting around, you know, looking through emails and internet, and I still find that what's very topical, and it's certainly hot off the press for me, is the UK ISA. You know, there's been articles recently by AJ Bell, and they're not the first to write about this, but to talk about the fact that even if everybody in the UK pays £5,000, which is it's not even come into the law yet, but if they do, into this new ISA that invests in the UK economy, that it'll only really bring in about 2 to 3 billion, which in the grand scheme of things is not a lot. And that assumes everyone does. So, you know, I got a couple of stats on here, which I thought was interesting, that this is according to AJ Bell, that adult ISA owners or adult investors own £750 billion worth of ISAs in the UK.
Wow.
And of that, £456 billion are stocks and shares ISAs and £285 billion are cash ISAs. So you'll recall they launched in 1999 by Gordon Brown to replace Peps and Tessas and all that sort of stuff. But it's interesting now, we've got some clients that have got ISAs that are 350,000 because they've maxed them out every year. Yeah. They've had growth. And have a guess how many different types of ISA there are or have been.
Now. Oh, God.
Name them. Come on, geek.
I couldn't name the word 10. 8.
Yeah, this is probably not all of them, but there's the cash ISA, which people sort of understand. Your money stays in cash. The stocks and shares ISA. There's the innovative finance ISA, which personally I've never used. We set up junior ISAs for kids. And then there's the lifetime ISA, help to buy ISA, which is now closed. And then there's this what might be what's called the British ISA. I mean, talk about making it complicated. And this is the point of AJ Bell saying it's there to try and stimulate UK growth, UK economy, but it's just going to add extra confusion to UK savers because they're like, well, another rule I've got to learn or another amount or what do I do or where's it going? And as much money as they put into that, they'll then rebalance their portfolios if they put £5,000 into the UK ISA to make use of the allowance to then alter the other value, you know, assets that they have to reduce monies into the UK. So it's basically a stupid political idea.
Yeah, no, I agree. Completely agree. I've not really paid much attention to it because what we want to do is create plans that help clients achieve what they want. And it kind of leads us on to today's topic, not really get waved by the fads and what's new and fashionable and this, that, and the other. But hot off the press for me, just, you know, really kind of highlighting that Tesla car sales were down in the first quarter of this year, 8.5%. And the share price is down about 50% over the last 18 months, 2 years or so. And I raise it because so many people sort of look at these things and currently it's like the Microsofts and the Nvidia and sort of say, hey, this is a great stock and invest in it and back it. And Tesla was the same going back a few years. every company has its day. And this is the one of the benefits of investing in a pooled investment, a collective investment, yeah. where you get the collective benefit of all these different companies. It smooths out the ups and downs. Okay, you don't get the extremes, but you don't get the extremes in either direction, on the up or the down. I just wanted to raise that. It's a great company. I think BYD has outsold it now. It's a Chinese car maker. So, it would be interesting to see whether it has had its day or whether it's going to pull back. Elon Musk is a very, very clever guy. So just think he might be spreading himself a bit too thin.
Yeah, maybe. Do you know, another thing that's sort of hot off the press with myself that I've been paying attention to, that's just perhaps it's because of I've got children that are 12 and 9. There was a podcast I listened to recently besides, the Finance Geeks podcast. It's by Chris Williamson. He's got a podcast called Modern Wisdom. And in episode 766, so we've done seven. He's done 766. He's a bit more adept at doing them than perhaps we are. But he interviews a chap called Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. And this chap's a sort of psychologist and an author. And he's written a book called... what is his book called? It's called The Anxious Generation. And it's all about the hidden dangers of social media on mental health. And it's quite interesting to me because I try to keep my children off screens as much as possible. And it's very, very difficult. Their friends have all got phones and they're on YouTube and TV, and we try to limit it and take them outside and play. But his discussion is all about, saying, there's going to be a movement soon. There certainly is in the UK. It's coming out in the US, where you need collective action to sort of say no mobile phones before age 12. This is his suggestion. Yeah. No social media before age 16, because of the impact it's having on young people's lives. So there used to be what was classed as the U shape of happiness, where the people in their teens and 20s would be the happiest, and then those in their 60s and 70s would be the happiest. And then when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, you're less happy because you've got a mortgage, you've got got to work, you've got children, you've got responsibilities and so forth, and you've got a boss telling you what to do. And I think that graph now is changing, where young people now are suffering such terrible mental anguish because they're comparing themselves to others on social media, and they're seeing the 0.001% of the population that are super wealthy, or they're super fit, or they're super good looking. And so it was very interesting reading, and I've put a link to it in the show notes, because if anyone doesn't want to read that or listen to that podcast or read his Substack. So he's got a web page called Afterbabel, and it's called afterbabel.com, and I've put the link in the show notes. And you can subscribe to it for free and then read all these really interesting papers on psychology and these sort of topics, which perhaps it's just me, but I quite enjoy that topic at the moment.
No. How old were your kids when they had mobile phones?
When Miles was probably 9 or 10 and Rory was 7 or 8. I mean, it's dreadful when you think about it. We limit it and we put all of those restrictions on as much as is possible to make sure that they're not looking at things they shouldn't be, and they have a certain amount of times when they can be on it. And it's a lot of effort, to be honest. And then you say you can't have it, and then their friends have got it and they don't want to be the odd one out. So it's everything in moderation again, but it's just, again, it's a very tricky thing. It's the dopamine hits that they get from opening it how amazing they are.
Yeah, in the games on it and stuff like that. No, I get it completely. Yeah. Interesting, you mentioned Chris Williamson podcast.
Yeah.
I've actually never listened to it, but Lewis in my office this week, we were having a meeting, having a chat, and he said a quote from Chris Williamson, which I really loved. He said, "The skills that will get you from 0 to 60 are not the same skills that will get you from 60 to 100. And I was like, I like that a lot. I've written it down. The skills that get you from 0 to 60 are not the same we get from 60 to 100. Because it's adapting. We've got to improve. We've got to change as individuals and keep progressing. So,
I like that. I like that as well. And a lot of our clients and yours and mine will be in their late 50s and 60s. A lot of what we do is help people in the retirement years and to transition from working to not working. And it's that subject matter that I really find interesting and trying to constantly improve upon. To say, well, what is the answer? How do you, transition? And I think that leads quite nicely into our focal point, this whole concept of how much is enough, it changes over time, doesn't it? Should we go into focal point in a minute? Or right now?
Let's go into it right now. Let's go to the main focal point.
Why don't you kick off and you tell me when you hear the question, how much is enough, what is it that you think about, and how would you address that concept with your clients or our listeners?
So how much is enough? I really think more about money. Mm-hmm. How much money is enough? I know some clients think about time. And when I talk about retirement, I know it's a loose term we don't like to use necessarily, but when we talk about retirement with clients, I often say to them, when you think about retirement, do you think about an amount of money or do you think about a time? And I think people have this judgment of, you know, what is it? Is it, well, okay, when I get to 65, that's when I'm going to have enough and retire. Or when I get £1 million, that's when I'm going to have enough and I'm going to retire. So yeah. How much is enough is kind of linked to, you know, what is it? And I think, but primarily most people will link it to financial and say, you know, how much money is enough? And it's something that, you know, arguably we all battle with. You know, we grow our businesses and it's something that I push against because my business and your business too, and most businesses naturally grow. You're decent at what you do. You do the right thing for people. You say what you're going to do and then fulfill it and you grow. But then actually you find that you're being pushed away from doing the thing that you love, financial planning, meeting clients, to actually becoming a manager and an owner and a director of a company that looking after staff and such like. And I have to resist that and push back on it because I love the face-to-face and the call with the client doing the financial planning side. The directorship, the management of the company is something I have to do to make sure I get that. So how much is enough is monetary, so in your bank, but almost like, well, actually, is a revenue of a business, have I got enough? Am I at the area that's enough for me to meet my clients' desires and what I want kind of thing? But having clarity, knowing that yourself, I think I have a phrase, clarity is power. When you know what it is you want, and for me, I think it's important that it's written down because we change how we feel based on our emotions. So you're in a great mood. You've got a bit of exercise inside you. You're great hydrated. You've got some energy. You're feeling great. You're going to make different decisions on that day than the day that you've just woken up after you make stag do. You've had half an hour's sleep and you've had a load of sugar inside your belly and you're not actually making great decisions. So having things written down and clarified for you, and I think this is what a financial planner does really well for you, is writing these things down, your goals and your outcomes, and having clarity of what it is you want and holding yourself to. Yeah. So, you know, knowing your outcome is really, really important to me. You know, what is it you want? How much is enough for you in monetary terms?
And so hang on, doesn't it surely depend on what someone's position is right now? Because, you know, your aspirations and your sort of expectations play a big part in the answering that question, how much is enough? So if you're earning £50,000 or £500,000 a year, the how much is enough is going to differ, you know, in terms of how much money I need for the rest of my life. So that's the monetary question, isn't it? How much money do I need for the rest of my life? And there's been, you know, lots of books written on this. And one in, you know, a couple in particular, I know that you're going to mention one book, Paul Armisen's book on how much money do you need for the rest of your life? I've read it. It's okay. You know, it answers in sort of 300 pages what you could probably answer a lot quicker in my mind. And I think what I'm going to try and do today, which he does mention in the book and it mentions in a few others, is try to work out what the formula is and in brief for calculating that number on a monetary basis.
Yeah, I think we're happiest as individuals when our values are met. When we know what we're going towards, we have an element of certainty. So if we're living towards our values, meeting our values, and we have an image of the future and we're working towards it, we have an element of certainty, not absolute certainty, because that becomes boredom, but we have an element of certainty that we're going to achieve it, then we're generally happy. Now, monetary wise, you know, that can vary. And I think it flexes for individuals. You know, I'll have younger clients who've got big financial aspirations and that's really important to them. And I'll challenge them on it. I'll say, why do you want to get 10 million? Why do you want to get 5 million? You know, what does that figure give you? What is it?
Well, if you're chasing money, it's never going to be enough, is it? If you're chasing, you know, a bigger house and a bigger car and a more expensive car and a bigger amount of money and a bigger pension, if it's only financial, it'll never be enough. And you talked there about happiness. And you know, one of the things that Morgan Housel says is happiness is a loving family. You know, it's health, it's friendship, it's getting 8 hours of sleep, it's having well-balanced children, it's being part of something bigger than yourself. And you don't necessarily need all the money in the world to achieve those things.
Yeah, but I'll jump in there. That's Morgan Housel's values. Mm-hmm. That's what's important to him. It's not for him to tell our listeners what makes them happy.
Completely. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? When you read a book or you listen to this, you still should use it to form your own decisions, your own opinions, definitely. You know, and decide what is it that's most important to me and what brings me happiness and so forth. But this concept of enough, let's stick with initially with the monetary answer. And I think we'll get onto the psychological answer as well. But in terms of the monetary answer, how would you explain to a client that comes in to see you, they give you the fact find, they tell you what they're earning, what their age is, you know that. And they're going through this discussion of how much is enough, as in, you know, okay, when I get to this point in the future, I'll have X amount of money. How do you work it out?
So we don't want a cash flow, but to give you a monetary figure, 25 times their annual income, their desired expenditure, or 300 times their monthly expenditure, whatever it might be. Most people talk about income. It's not income, it's expenditure. So I often read on social media, you know, 300 times your monthly income is a fact. It's not, because if you're saving half of your income anyway, you don't need that. It's 300 times your expenditure you need.
Yeah. So if you're earning, let's say, just for easy maths, I always stick with the net monthly income, because a lot of people talk about their gross annual income and that doesn't really make as much of a difference. You need to know what's the monthly income. If the monthly income was, this is where some stats come into play, £5,000 a month, whether it's one person or between a couple. And that rule of 300, I think, works, because if you're drawing an income of 4% from a portfolio, to get to that, you need to times it by 12, then by 25, you know, and so that ends up being times 300. You do have to account for tax. And I know that some people have used a figure of 375 times 375, which I think is too much. So I think if you wanted to be pessimistic, you times it by 325. Anyway, £5,000 a month times 300 is £1.5 million. But then you have to adjust for inflation. And a lot of the calculators don't do that. And so to be quite geeky, I'll tell you the formula for this. You have to have the future value calculation. You have to have future value equals present value times one plus the rate of interest to the number of periods.
You're losing people.
So anyway, you are getting too this geeky. Means that in £1.5 million in 10 years' time, if inflation is 3%, you need £2,015,000 to provide the same level of income in real terms. Anyway, if you're shooting forwards a number, and the book that you were going to talk about, that Lee Eisenberg's book, The Number, you know, one of the calculations you can use for that is your monthly income you need at a point in the future times 300. You adjust it for inflation, and then you get a figure, and then you have to also factor in things like defined benefit pensions you're going to get, any rental income, any state pensions. And again, as part of this financial plan, you'll get a structure for what your income will be at a point in the future.
You know, you can't beat a financial plan. I promise you, I know we're financial planners, and it's almost like saying, you know, if you've got a hammer, everything's solutions a nail kind of thing. But a financial plan, a comprehensive financial plan, is going to take all your assets, all your liabilities, your future cash inflows, your future cash outflows, and it's going to develop it. On our website, on lexingtonwealth.co.uk, you can go on, you can use a free, none of the details come through to me, it's a free demo plan on there, but a software, and you can build this own financial plan on there. And it's great. It's really, really good. It gives people a really clear idea of how much is enough, how much money they need. I don't know. It's all about just being happy, isn't it? That's the outcome. That's really what you're trying to accomplish.
It is. Do you know, I like the Mitch Antony questions. Mitch Antony's an author in the US. He's been doing it a long time. He helps financial planners. And he's got the three questions about enough. And I use these with clients of mine. So number one is, do you have enough? And he's referring to, obviously, money in that case, or assets. And then the second question is, have you had enough? And I like that one, because it's sort of, have you had enough of your work? Have you had enough of your job? You know, do you want to try something else? And the third one is, will you have enough to do? And, it, you know, this is as in, you know, what would your routine be? What would your structure be in retirement or in your second life years? And I think what he said was, most advisors just focus on the first one, do you have enough? But it's what's crucially important is to talk about changing and transitioning, because just because you're doing a high powered job or a 40 or 50 or 60 hour a week job earning X amount now, when you get to a point in the future when the mortgage is paid off, perhaps, and hopefully it is, and the kids have left the nest and you're no longer contributing to ISAs and pensions and so forth, it's important to sort of say, well, just even if I've got enough money, you know, am I going to be happy just with this pot of money, with this income coming in, just sitting there? Right. Just what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can change jobs. You can move to a part-time job. You can change jobs completely. Sometimes you find that limo drivers or those that you know, work in charities, they're already, some of them, retired. They just carry on working because they like adult interaction. They want to do something. And this concept of will you have enough to do, you know, it's you have to plan for that point in retirement where you say, this is what my new routine is going to look like. You know, I'm going to go to the gym here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for a dog walk. I'm going to go on holiday here. So you've got a point where, you know, you've got a new regime that you, that satisfies your, you know, life desires, you know, so that you're actually enjoying yourself and remaining happy.
I think planning for your retirement period, your financial independence, is probably equally as important as planning your career when you go in or setting up a business, whatever it might be. And so many people just drift into retirement, and so many people are so quick to race for the exit. So I'm working, I just want to get to retirement, And really, what you don't really want to do is go to retirement. What you probably want to do is move away from what you're currently doing. It's probably too much stress for you. So let's design exactly what you just said. Let's design the future. Let's make our future bigger than our past. Let's look at it so it's something that's really compelling to move towards, that we're really excited to do. Definitely.
This concept of enough as well, one of the things I found fascinating with the Jonathan Haidt podcast with Chris Williamson was they talk about different periods of time, and it's in various books as well, this concept of, when was the most fun time, the fairest time, the best time in America? Because a lot of these are American studies. You know, the 1950s is often regarded as a time when everyone was most prosperous and everyone was happiest, and they were the good old times, right? And I found the rationale behind it really interesting. It's after the war. The average income in the US at the time in the 50s was $29,000, adjusted for inflation, per annum, and a lot of what people had was quite similar type of job, similar house, similar car. And so your basis for comparison was quite leveled. You know, you're not chasing anything else. If everyone's got the same, everything's great. Now, today in America, the average income is $68,000, adjusted for inflation. And people have, you know, the polio vaccination, they have Advil, they have holidays, they have more time off, they have iPhones, they have the internet, they have Netflix, they have all of these things, healthcare, they have lots of things that they perhaps didn't have before. But the poverty gap now is so massive that a lot of people compare themselves to their neighbor who's got a car that's twice as expensive, a house that's twice as big, and they say, well, I can't be happy now because, you know, I don't have that. They've got more than me. And that very thing is the concept that it's very difficult to get past, about who is your social, which tribe are you in? And if you've got lots of tribes that you're in, lots of social circles, and you're comparing yourself to others, you'll never be happy, because if you're comparing it on a monetary basis, because it's never enough.
Yeah. It's strive for more happiness. That's the thing. It's like, you know, I truly say to my clients, strive for more happiness, not increase net worth, more money, more happiness. What brings you more happiness? And for some of my clients, it's actually working. You know, and I personally enjoy working.
Yeah.
I like what I do.
But hang on. Happiness in itself is quite fleeting. It's quite difficult to aim for and achieve, when a lot of it's based on things outside of your control. Some of it's definitely in your control. And I think that the better thing to consider is to strive for contentment. Even though it's lower on your expectations, you know, if you can be content doing a certain thing, if you can be content on a certain amount of income or with a certain lifestyle, you know, you can't necessarily be happy all the time.
Well, I think what you're trying to say is, if you don't challenge yourself, you can't necessarily be happy all the time. Does that make sense? But what I would probably say is, I got to be honest, I think I'm happy most of the time, but it doesn't mean things go right for me all the time. Things go wrong. I receive bad news. Things happen, you know, but it's how you interpret that information.
Yes.
You know, what does this mean to me? What does this mean to me? It doesn't mean I'm going to now change my state. I'm going to be unhappy. I kind of give myself a period of time. I'm like, okay, I get caught up. That's enough. That's enough. I'm now going to move on. I'm not going to allow these excellent environment, these excellent stimulus, to affect my mood and how I am. But you know, things happen. But you know, going back to the key question is, how much is enough? I think it really depends on your lifestyle. I think it depends on what your outcomes are. But to calculate it, you know, we've said 300 times your monthly expenditure is a good idea. So you know, if you want £1,000 a month, for example, £300,000 should be a big enough pot to provide you the income you need for the rest of your life without worrying about things too much, as long as money's invested. And we can go on. We'll probably do another podcast on that another time, because there's loads of challenges around whether the 4% rule is the right amount of money and rate of income and everything else. But it's a good rule of thumb. But that's sort of like at a basic level. But what I'd really encourage your listeners to do is, look, if you're really considering this, look at a financial plan. You know, go and see a financial planner, get your information into the tool, develop a financial plan, because what a financial plan can do is it can look at inflows and outflows of money throughout your life. It won't be a linear expenditure. So it can cater for other things. And there's a free tool on my website if you need it.
The psychological aspect of how much is enough. There's a book written by Robert and Edward, his son, Skidelsky, and it's called How Much Is Enough, this book, and it's quite long. It's 300 or 400 pages, but in a nutshell, they sort of try and reduce it down to trying to achieve what he classes as the good life. And he says you need 7 things for this. You need good health, you need security, you need respect, you need personality, you need harmony with nature, you need friendship, and you need leisure. And he goes in to explain what all of those things mean, but it's trying to say that you need a certain element of all of these things to live your very best life. And again, take happiness away for a second, but to actually get to this point where you feel that enough's enough. Because when I was addressing the question initially and saying that there's a monetary answer and there's a psychological answer, the psychological answer is to ask yourself things like, well, how much is enough freedom? How much is enough equality? How much is enough care, compassion, empathy? How much is enough independence or patience or kindness? And then how many are enough followers online? How many likes are enough? Because you can ask, you can discuss the concept of how much money you need, how much wealth, how much property, how much profit, how much power. But there's lots of other questions to do with that concept of how much is enough. And the psychological element to it fascinates me, because it comes down to a personal sense of maturity, I suppose. And those who chase things constantly and work towards them and don't have that sense of contentment and sense of gratitude will just never be happy and never feel like it's enough. So it comes down to who you compare yourself to and to feeling that it's not a challenge. It's not a goal to try and have more, more, more. If you don't have that, put that line in the sand where you say, this is enough for me, whatever that is, and to live a certain lifestyle, then you'll struggle.
I don't think wanting more is a bad thing. To strive for more, whether it's more money, to be fitter, to give more, whatever it might be, I think that's absolutely fine. But I do also agree with you having this contentment, being appreciated where you are now, but where you are right now, I'm happy. It's great. Doesn't mean I don't want to grow and be more, because I can. I think everything in life is growing or it's dying. Your business is either growing or it's going backwards. And as individuals, we need to be learning more and stay on the top of our game. It's quantifying. I think how much is enough really is underlying that is, how much do I need to be financially independent of working? That's really what people want to know. So I'm free. Now I've got choices. Yeah. When I've got choices, I can then follow my values.
Yeah. But when you know what the goal is, you to a large extent, you've got to be prepared to alter the goalposts and to live within your means and to review matters every 6 months and to make sure that you're not going to run out of money. But it's got to be an achievable goal. And if you've got a plan to work towards, it does reduce a lot of stresses and anxiety. Because if you've met someone who said, like a financial planner, this is what you need to do to achieve this, this, and this, this is how long it's going to take. And if you're on board with it, and if you can, live with, it's not that difficult mathematically to plan towards it, because, inflation returns and stock market returns, they're relatively easy to predict long term. You've just got to be quite pessimistic. We assume 6% growth for market returns and 3% inflation. And then you can project things forward and say, okay, this is what the pot will be, and you'll have this much income. And if that's enough for the person, they can make decisions with that and actually live a life, within their means.
And we talk to clients about enjoying the journey. Life isn't an outcome, okay? It's the end. And it's about enjoying the journey and doing that. But our clients fall into two camps. And that's what we recommend both of these books, okay? You've either got the clients who are accumulating, who aren't financially independent, we calculate for them what their number is. So we say, okay, let's turn off all earned income. Let's leave your investments and stuff as they are. How much money would you need today to be financially independent? And that's a really nice eye opener. So a client comes to you, they might be employed, they might be just starting out in their career. And we say, okay, look, no more income going forward. How much, if you won the lottery yesterday or come into an inheritance or you sold your business, how much do you need? That's a really nice number for them to calculate. It's very easy to do. And we assume it's invested, similar to what you just said. But for most of our clients, they're financially independent. They're older. They've got all this money. And we don't want them to die with hundreds of thousands, millions in their investment stuff. That was the point. It's unspent dreams and memory stuff. So we talk about this book, Die With Zero. And it's a really good book just to talk about, say, hey, you know, how much more can you spend and still enjoy your life? So we generally give them a projection to around about age 80. How much more money can they spend every year till age 80 and still have, it depends on the individual, but between 100 and 500,000 pounds of investment. So it's not going down to the breadline by a long shot. And they, that almost like gives them permission. Cause the biggest bugbear I've got is when I've got clients who've got too much money and they're flying economy class to far places in the world. It drives me nuts. I'm like, just enjoy this money. Yeah. Someone's going to spend the money. It's either going to be you or your son-in-law or your daughter-in-law. Yeah. You know, they will have no problem going business class, first class with this money. So let's just enjoy it.
But a lot of people that are aged now, let's say they're in their 70s or 80s, they've lived through certain times where they're so used to frugality and saving that you just can't turn the switch. It doesn't make them happier just spending lots and lots of money at a certain point in the future. And so it is a challenge to help them allocate their money. It doesn't necessarily mean spend it on themselves. As you said, it could be spend it on children, grandchildren. It could be gifts to charity. It could be helping others. But do it during your lifetime rather than just leave, be the richest person in the graveyard and leave a big pot of money later on.
That Die With Zero does it well. He talks about it well.
Another concept I need to get across is this idea of working out as well how much you need. I often talk to clients about saying, you know, you probably need 50 to 66%, so half to two thirds of your current monthly net income. So the reason I say that is because if one's on $5,000 a month now, net income after tax, and they move to 60%, that's £3,000. Reason why it's less is because your mortgage will be paid off. Because again, the children will have left the nest. If you've got kids, you're no longer contributing to ISAs and pensions. So some things go down and some things like R&R and holidays and so forth can go up. But it's understanding that you don't need to be on the same amount of money that you're on now in the future, you know, because your needs and wants change. It's honestly, the question in itself fascinates me, this concept of how much is enough, because I've got clients I work with that are, you know, say they've got, let's say, £800,000 of assets and they're just deliriously happy. They're living within their means. They love it. And then others that have got 10 times as much and they're just not happy at all. It's never enough. They love working, or they just continue to work. They can't make the switch to stop working and to actually spend their money and start to decumulate. They can't do it.
No. I completely understand that. I completely relate to it as well with our clients. One thing I would say to any listeners is know your number, though. You know, really get it calculated. Know what your number is. Because I've actually asked financial planners. I've been in a group and I've said, what's your number? How much is enough? You don't know, no ongoing income anymore. Keep your assets what they got. How much more money do you need? And they're like deer in the headlights. You know, it's like really, you know your number, know what it is for you. But Paul's sitting uncomfortably on a chair now in case I ask him. But I won't ask you. But, you know, just know your number and then you've got a better chance of working towards and achieving it. But more importantly than that, know what your values are. Know what brings you happiness and spend your money and things on doing like that. So,
we gave that a good thrashing, didn't we? Should we move on to?
I think so. It's just two pennies worth.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let me kick off. So I've sort of touched on them already. So my books, very briefly, are these two this week, and I would highly, highly, highly recommend both of them. I think they're absolutely fantastic.
What they are again.
Yeah, Die With Zero, written book by a guy called Bill Perkins. I read it a long time ago, so I might be slightly out with this, but from my memory, he was some kind of investor, made a ton of money, and he kind of sort of said, you know, I'm going to move away from Wall Street. I'm going to start enjoying it. And he basically, his outcome is to spend all of his money, spend it or give it away and enjoy it during his lifetime. His philosophy is, well, why would I leave an inheritance to my children when it'd be much easier to give them money now during my lifetime? And if I've got money to do things, bring me pleasure, why don't I do it? And it's a real eye opener. And I really like the book. It's very, very good. And you hit the nail on the head when you say, you know, you've got these clients who can't change their habits. Most of our job, and I'd say ours, Paul, and my job probably is getting clients to really appreciate that they can enjoy their money. Another book that I use more often than not for clients who are accumulating, so they're not financially independent, they might be in a position building up their retirement funds, is The Number by Lee Eisenberg. Now, Lee was a journalist, I think it was the New York Times, and he used to go to dinner parties and he would ask people, okay, how much is enough? What's your number? You know, how much you need to retire on? Stuff like that. And the first half of the book is all about that. And that's my favorite part, just talking to people about how much money do they need to not have to worry about money again, whether that's to be financially free or do whatever they want. And to know that number in your own mind is really, really powerful. You know, I think once you've got it in your head, if you're working towards it, your actions take you towards it more and you're more likely to achieve it. But yeah, The Number by Lee Eisenberg is a fantastic book, but complete opposite ends of the scale. One is decumulation. I've got so much money, let's go and enjoy it all. And the other one is, okay, I need to accumulate it, what it is. But that sweet spot in the middle between accumulation, decumulation is where I think we add most of our value, try and get clients to really appreciate what they've got. So
yeah. Good.
I've got
good
books. I've got a film for you, but you do something as well.
So I've got a couple of things. First is the Aura ring. I've got an Aura ring. Decided to go for it. Yeah, and it looks terrible, doesn't it? I quite like it. I really like it because there's over 1 million members now. I looked it up recently, and although you pay about £300 for the ring, and it's about £5.99 a month. I've got on with it because it's quite. It's small and it's not the same as wearing a watch. You can wear a nice watch and you can wear this ring, and it's easy to sleep with, you know, because it's just a ring on your finger. But what it does, it monitors lots of things. So it monitors the amount of steps that you take. It monitors your readiness score, your level of sleep and the quality of your sleep and the activity. I mean, it even monitors your blood oxygen levels, your heart rate variance and the calories burned. And so it gives you these statistics and these data back, and the app itself is, I think, particularly good. And it shows you over time how your trends have been changing. So if you are interested in monitoring your health, you can buy a sports watch like a Garmin watch and so forth as well, which is a bit more chunky. But if you like to wear a nice watch, you know, that's a Breitling or a Tag or whatever it is, just a normal watch, you know, consider the Oura ring. So the link's in the show notes. The second thing I've got is watched it last night, in fact, on Netflix with my wife. It's called Scoop, and it's Rufus Sewell as Prince Andrew, and it's got Gillian Anderson as Emily Maitlis, the BBC journalist and former newsreader. So it's behind the Prince Andrew interview on Jeremy Epstein, and Sam McAllister was the BBC booker who sort of persuaded Prince Andrew to go on record about his friendship with Jeremy Epstein, the convicted sex offender. And Rufus Sewell is just tremendous in it. I got to be honest. I mean, I saw the original interview with Emily Maitlis, and it's on TV. You can still see it on BBC iPlayer now. It was in 2019, but the film, which is what it is you know, an hour and a half long, a bit longer. It's well worth watching. Yeah. You watch him squirm and it's just a car crash of an interview, isn't it? For him? But, especially when he says he just didn't sweat.
Of your life.
Yeah. I know. I suppose it's a bit cringy, but I actually really like Rufus Sewell, so I watched that. What did you say? You had a film or something as well?
Fantastic film. Absolutely loved it. Watched it in the Easter when I was off. The Beautiful Game, Bill Nye.
Yes. You've seen it? Okay. No, I've heard about it. I don't think I watched it.
It's about the homeless World Cup football. Sorry, the Football World Cup. Okay. So I didn't know. It's a true story. Apparently there is a World Cup football game for homeless individuals. And Bill Nye stars in it, who's one of my favorite actors. I think he's done some fantastic work. And it's a really, really great film. And he does a really good job in it. So highly recommend you watch that too. Sticking with the theme today, I'm going to start because you normally have a lot more than I do on this. So I'm going to jump in early and just stick to this. So here's my quote. John D. Rockefeller, the founder of Standard Oil Company and one of the first billionaires of the United States, was once asked by a reporter, how much money is enough? And he calmly replied, just a little bit more. Only from a billionaire, right?
I know. Your sense of perspective changes dramatically. Interesting that some of the billionaires that you read about, like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and so forth, they've obviously got a lot of money, but their drive isn't to make more money. Same with Mark Zuckerberg. It's not that. It's to change the world. And I actually heard this statistic recently that of the, I think it's the 10 richest people in the world ever, there's been 13 divorces. So some of them obviously divorced more than once. I think that, what's his name? Elon Musk has divorced a number of times, and so has Bill Gates, and so has the Amazon chap?
Jeff Bezos
has divorced. So it's not for them. If your concept of happiness and having enough is having an amazing marriage and children and so forth, then it's not just the money that will do that.
It's obviously either Musk or Gates. Bezos or Gates' divorce is the biggest divorce in history, I think. Pretty tremendous.
So I've obviously got some anecdotes here and some other quotes, but have you got anything else for us besides that one quote?
No, because you'll take over. Go on.
So I've got a quote here from Epicurus, the Stoic philosopher. I do like Epicurus. Nothing is sufficient. Nothing is sufficient for the person who finds sufficiency too little. Hey, listen, it's all about enough. What about this one then? This is from a 6th century Chinese philosopher, Lao Tzu. He said, "He who knows enough is enough will always have enough." And I've got another one here.
Please keep listening. Stay with us.
Be thankful for what you have. If you concentrate on what you don't have, you'll never have enough.
I agree with that.
And this quote's all about gratitude. And being grateful for what you have. A statistic here, because we are the finance geeks, is that 70% of lottery winners go bust in the first 2 years. And so if it was all about money, and just saying, that's great, my life's now changed, I can be happy, I can be delighted. If you have a sudden change in your wealth and you inherit a lot of money or you get an enormous bonus, your parameters, your lifestyle, it just changes so much. Your outlook on life changes so dramatically, and it doesn't necessarily bring happiness. So as an anecdote, Will Smith, the actor, once said in his biography that when he was poor and depressed, he could dream about a future when he had more money and the money would make his problems go away. And once he became rich, that optimism and that hope was gone. He had all the money in the world he'd ever need, but he was still depressed and his life was still filled with problems. So it's not as if money just takes problems away. It just gives you more problems. You buy more stuff, you've got more stuff to repair, more stuff that goes wrong.
It does allow you to arrive in your problems in style though, right? Come on, let's not be about the bush.
What is it? It wasn't Zsa Zsa Gabor. I'm trying to think you said about having enough money, just doesn't know where to go shopping. I can't, what was the quote now? Where's that? You said that money's for, what was the quote? Oh, come to me in a minute. Anyway, Rick Rubin, this is another quote. He's a record executive and producer in the States. He said, it's hard to get really depressed until your dreams come true. Once your dreams come true and you realize you feel the same way you did before, you've got a feeling of hopelessness. It's this concept that happiness and money are dramatically linked. They obviously have a great relationship. If you've got more money, enough money to solve issues, solve problems, live a lifestyle you want, that's great. But just vying and just saying, I just need more is not the right answer. I think looking to reduce problems, keeping things simple, remove anxieties, focusing on happiness or contentment.
Improving the way in which you manage problems, because I don't think you'll ever reduce problems or get rid of them, and having a vision bigger than your past. Vision. That's really what you got to do. So,
compelling vision. Very good. Well, you look pretty happy, Warren. Have you got enough? Is it enough for you at the moment? Do you feel the need to change anything?
No, I don't have to work financially, but I love working. Yeah. I love what I do, but I balance it. So I, 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off. I take the 2 weeks off and I just hang out with the family and do stuff. But when I'm working, I'm full on 100%. And when I'm off, I'm off. And yeah, it's just, but then that, but I explained to my clients, you know, I hope to be doing this when I'm 70 and 75 and stuff like that. Hopefully, you know, when I'm older, you know, because it gives me purpose. It gives me purpose, like communication. I get to talk to people like you. You know, it's, people don't like, it's not they don't like working. They don't like that job. They just got to find the work that they do enjoy.
Well, you've got to make your vocation a vacation. That's what they say.
Exactly that. Exactly that. We call it a wrap for today, or?
I think we should. Yeah. Well done for today. Thanks very much. Go on.
No worry. Okay. I think that's a wrap for today. Thanks for joining us. Please like, share, and subscribe to our show. Please leave any comments and questions you have in the box, and we'll make sure we look at them and answer them in a future episode. So see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you're enjoying this show, please subscribe to our podcast. It's a great way to support us. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or topics you'd like to suggest for the show, please put these in the comments section on YouTube. Remember, if you find yourself humming our theme song for the next week, it's not a sign of brainwashing, it's just a testament to our awesomeness, or possibly a mild earworm. Consult a doctor if symptoms persist. This show is designed to be informational only and does not constitute investment or financial advice. Please contact a regulated financial advisor before taking any specific action.